everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here for a fourth episode of Edward Mordrake. I'm sorry. It's still Edward Mordrake. I'm here with Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef A-Team.
Yo.
Hey. And, we're here to finish up, hopefully, this ghost and his interaction. I mean, I think we did, right? Didn't we, like, get right to... Oh no, we got to them finding the kids, right? I guess that's good enough. Should we kick off and get into it? Because last thing we saw was Jimmy and the lady on a bike, Maggie, who just like saw them go in the woods and were like, well, gotta deal with that, I guess. Which, no, you don't, Jimmy, but okay.
I have to imagine, I think I made a joke about it in the last episode, but I have to imagine, like, imagine you're in Maggie's shoes. You just, like, joined this freak show under the false pretense that you're, like, a fortune teller or whatever, because you're part of this, like, elaborate scheme to, I guess, snatch a conjoined twins pair with your crime partner. And, like, you're already feeling a little antsy. You've already told your partner you're feeling a little antsy because, like, there might be something else going on here. Like, I think these people might have done, like, a murder. People keep saying that they did a murder, and, like, there's a chance they've done multiple murders at this point. And Meep died. So, like, I'm feeling a little bit, a little stressed surrounded by these people. And then all of a sudden, well, on a bike with Jimmy, a guy she's known for 24 hours in the middle of the night in the woods, and his bike breaks down. They see a murder clown.
His bike does not break down. It runs out of gas. Because breaking down is something you can't prepare for.
Can I also just, like, to go on your scenario, too, if she calls back, would you be totally shocked if, like, she calls Stanley and is like, and then Meep died? He goes, whoa, wait, Meep died? Like, I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't miss a beat on that. Like,
well,
yeah.
Did you take the body? We could use that. We could sell that for money.
Damn it, not Meep, though. I liked him.
But, yeah, like, then, like, all this happens to her in the span of, like, 48 hours, and then she sees a murder clown abduct a woman roughly her age, maybe a little younger, and she's like, hey, is that guy with you? And he's like, no. And then Jimmy's like, no, I have to go fight him. Like, imagine being in her position, like, okay, well, now there's two warring, like, circus freak show, like, factions that are gonna be, like, fighting each other. I didn't sign up for this. I don't actually know what I signed up for, but it wasn't this.
I don't think it was this.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, poor Maggie, kind of. But yeah, Jimmy's like, I gotta go fight him.
Maggie will inexplicably fall in love with Jimmy within the day. This is the usual case for Evan Peters.
And he doesn't even have to use his lobster fingers to, like, make her come or whatever. Like, can you imagine?
I couldn't if it weren't shown to me explicitly in a previous episode, to be honest. But
like a big rounded carrot. I think this is just where it hard cuts to the second part of Elsa's backstory, which is
oh boy.
Dumb, bad, doesn't understand industries.
Because this is so insane, because what we're about to say is so insane, I feel like it would only serve the audience better if we reminded them what the first half was.
Yeah. Please do, yeah.
So, remember, this is part two of her weird backstory, because she opened with, hey, old-timey ghost man, do you want to know how I lost my legs, and also about some woman named Marlena that will literally never be mentioned? Would you like to know about that? Here, by the way, just so I can get ahead of it, because I will forget, my theory about the Marlena thing is that Marlena was, like, her stage name, and they just forgot to ever mention that, ever. because otherwise it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And she never actually mentions it. So
that's a good theory. I like that, yeah.
I think that was, like, her alter ego in this industry. And she just never, ever says that when telling us about her backstory. So we're, I guess, supposed to assume that it's not a real person. But
I mean,
it's
these
weird.
Are questions Edward Mordrake, the backstory demon, should be asking, in my opinion. But you know, yeah. He's not doing his job, so whatever.
So when she first asks the backstory demon whether or not he wants to know why she lost her legs and also about this woman we never hear about, he's like, yeah, actually, that is why I'm here. I think it would be cool if you told me about it. And then she tells us a story about how back before the war in Germany, everybody was fucking just so much all the time. And she was a weird dominatrix who was kind of bad at her job, honestly. And people would watch her do it sometimes. And I guess she had one particular client who loved sitting on rusty nails on a toilet seat. And people loved watching it or something. And then she's like, well, that's the story. And Edward Mordrake is like, all right, well, none of that had to do with a woman named Marlena or your legs being missing. So could we maybe get back to that part of the story? And she's like, no.
And to highlight a little bit, they like really try to sell the watchers as like intimidating. They're like, and there was another group. They would just sit there and behold the watchers. They just observed. But it's like, all they've done is they've upgraded the cuck chair to a cuck gallery. And, like, I'm not intimidated by the cuck gallery. I'm sorry. You're never going to scare me with them.
Also, like, she shows us, like, the brothel. Like, most of it is, like, public. Like, it's not like all of this was taking place behind closed doors. It was, like, an open floor format. So, like, technically anybody could just watch whatever they wanted to. It was kind of like a... just walk into a room and you might observe something type situation.
Yeah, like an open concept middle school. Exactly.
Like a haunted house, but for sex. Yeah.
Like a WeWork. Yeah. An open floor concept WeWork situation. yeah, so that was part one. And remember, Edward Mordrake's like, okay, well, you opened this by telling me that you were going to tell me how you lost your legs, and you explicitly did not lose your legs in that story. So I feel like there's more to it. And she's like, no. And he's like, well, the demon on the back of my head actually knows everything. So he knows that there is more. And I'm like, well, that seems a bit counterproductive to this whole situation we have going on right now with the asking of questions and the listening to the stories. It kind of feels like maybe also, he could have just picked ahead of time.
Right.
Also, like, later on, there will be some implications that he wants them to say it. Like, he's testing to see if they will admit that they have done wrong or something along those lines.
Right.
But that kind of falls apart when you just point blank tell the person, I already know everything. Like, that to the point that that's, like, a strategy interrogators use when they split people up, is they claim, oh, I already know everything the other guy told me. But if you don't tell me, you're going to be in, like, way deeper shit. That kind of stuff. It's, like, a tactic you use. So you can't really be deploying that if you're testing the moral character of somebody.
Which, just, can we revisit? As I said in our last episode, this isn't like a moral judgment situation. He isn't like
okay, but it,
judging
it is.
Them morally.
It's not supposed to be, yeah. But it clearly is.
That's, yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's like it's a different thing depending on who he's talking to and what the writers feel like at that moment.
Like, the last person who he does end up taking, he legitimately is just like, oh, you're such a sweet boy who was innocent and pure and didn't ever do anything wrong. You were just treated bad, so you can come. You pass the test.
You
and
get
I was
to
like,
go to hell.
Wait, hold on.
You pass the test and get to go to hell with me.
Yes.
Yeah, wait, this is bad.
So with that in mind, now it's time for the part two of Elsa's backstory, which if you thought part one was wacky, buckle up for part two. All right, we're back in sex stuff, because obviously that wouldn't have been where it ended. So she's like, yeah, the people who used to, the watchers, I guess upgraded to like filming it. I guess we've started filming it now. And she's like... they said that I made men ejaculate gold. And I'm like, interesting euphemism. I think that doesn't work the way that you think it does.
Damn, the porn industry had some real ass money before the internet, huh?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Real top percent of OnlyFans. Top 1% of OnlyFans ass shit for Elsa.
Yeah, in pre-Nazi World War II.
Yeah. And she's like talking about it very sinisterly, like, and she's like, they made what they call blue movies, which at this point, they want us, because of the way it's set up, because it's like kind of dark and grainy and black and white, they want us to associate that with the term snuff film, which is crazy, because in roughly 2 minutes, they're going to actually use the term snuff film. But blue movie just means like porn, but like in the 1930s. Yeah, like a little horny, like a movie that was like a little bit horny. But they say it with a sinister undertone that makes like the audience feel that it means something way worse than what it does in this scene.
Yeah. To be clear, when people use blue as a descriptor like this, generally it's like my grandpa would be like, not to get a little blue, but I think these guys stink.
Like, it's like old comic term too for like, you know, like blue humor, you know, like I don't want to get a little too blue here. I'm not Rodney Dangerfield or whatever, you know, but
nobody scratch my anka.
Like a significant downgrade in like overall severity. Content severity than what we have already previously seen her doing.
Sit down on those rusty nails, butt boy. 10 seconds later, I just think that guy stinks.
Yeah. So the flashback we're seeing is them shooting one of these said movies, and she's like, "I showed up one day. I would do the accent the whole time, but I don't want to."
It's exhausting.
I showed up one day, and there was only like a bed in a weird hole of a room, and there was no other person. And I was like, "Hey, where are the other people? I usually do like stuff to other people. That's what I do. That's my whole deal." And they're like, "Shut up and drink this." And she's like, "Okay."
Yeah, there's a real severe case of okay, like, of her specifically calling out red flags in the situation and being like, "Oh, the micro snifter of brandy. Don't mind if I do."
Yeah.
Yeah, like we're not even like being funny. Literally, that's what happens. Is she's like, "Yeah, all right," and then just drinks this random shot glass.
Like Voss is me partner. Literally yelling, "Where's my, like, I'm supposed to have a partner for this scene. What's going on? Oh, a micro snifter of brandy? Yum." It's the smallest snifter of brandy.
She doesn't like ask what's in it. She doesn't like smell it. She's just like, "Okie dokie," and then like takes the shot.
It's just like, I imagine being in the middle of a conversation with somebody that's like gotten so heated that we're just at the point of like, "I'm gonna fucking kill you, man," like that kind of, but like meaning it. And then in the middle of them just being like, "Oh, hey, do you want an orange juice, by the way?" And I'd be like, "Oh yeah, of course."
But the orange juice is blue. The orange juice is blue, and you don't ask any questions about it. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Yum.
Just, hey, is this drain cleaner? Stinky. Anyway, she just fucking drinks it. And like, Elsa's like not the kind of character that probably would do that. Anyway, they decided she needed to be drugged. Like, literally at that point, they could have just been like, "And then they chloroformed me," which would have made way more sense.
Yeah.
They knocked me out and tied me down. Because if they were making a film where they were explicitly planning on killing her, A, they wouldn't really care if she was comfortable. B, I think the whole point is that you don't like numb the person or anything. Like, not to get too weird with it, but I think that's part of the thing. Yeah, is that they're aware. That feels, you know, like that's part of the deal.
I haven't done a lot of research, but that seems correct. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Just gut feeling here.
Also, I gotta say, like, again, because we're getting into what is about to happen to her, in case it's not like blatantly obvious, and she's gonna lose her legs. Like, I would say that the line between making someone semi-conscious and knocking them the fuck out with a drugged beverage, probably takes, like, a meticulous amount of measurement.
Oh, it's really hard. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I don't don't think these guys did that. I think that she would have just been unconscious, just like fully. However, she is like riding that fine line of conscious enough to know the horrific thing that's about to happen, but also not able to do anything about it, which I feel like is an extremely difficult thing to achieve.
That's a Hollywood poison.
Yeah.
You're aware and awake and can perceive and experience everything, but you can't work your body in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, that's a Hollywood poison.
That is the kind of shit you only believe that it might be feasible if, like, a mad scientist said they did it to you, or someone with, like, a magic power of some kind. Like, oh, yeah, I paralyzed you, but you can still feel everything. Like, oh,
God,
okay.
That's good brandy.
Yeah. And then she's like, then they cut off my legs with chainsaws. I could get into how that doesn't make any sense, why they wouldn't have chainsaws in 1932. Like that.
Oh,
they would
I thought
have chainsaws.
You were just going to be like, chainsaws are not an effective
well,
means of
also,
cutting human
that
flesh.
Too. That was point number two about chainsaws, is that chainsaws are not a severing object. They are... more just kind of a destructive item.
They take a lot of bites out of stuff. Yeah, real fast. Yeah.
They're not really good at severing. They're more good at just like destroying whatever is in their way and tearing through things. Either way, they cut off her legs with chainsaws. And then she's like, they were making a snuff film. And I'm like, all right. They are not doing that because A, that was not a term in 1932 or 1952 when this show was set. And B, that's not what a fucking snuff film is.
Yeah, I was going to say, B, you lived. so it wasn't a snuff film.
I mean,
yeah. You see, the part where we're talking, that means it wasn't a snuff film. That means it was a very bad gore film. It's like, yeah.
I mean, to be fair, it was the 30s. They were working out the kinks, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
They were workshopping the term snuff film.
Should we finish that broad off before we go? No, just leave her.
No, that wasn't part of the deal. Also, like, who is the market for this? Like, I can't, how are you distributing this? Like,
that's the big one for me, because you could make some argument like, well, of course, there's sick people, blah, blah, blah. But, like, in the 30s, I don't think it's super easy to, like, get film and a camera and a place you can display it privately, you know, unless you're, like, mega rich and you, therefore there's not much market for this or something. But, like, you would put it in a theater. That's like what you do when you record stuff back then, you know? So this is like impossible not to get caught, personally. So I think, you know, but who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, and also it doesn't seem like there's much like, I don't know, like impetus to make it in the first place, because it doesn't seem particularly marketable.
Right.
Son of
a
bitch, Slopey, if you made me think, oh, is this film before talkies? Did they have to like play it up there and have a little guy with a piano roll being like, da 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 da
da
I'm just imagining this little guy clocking in and like tipping his hat to everybody before he sits down at the piano.
And then like the guy falls on like the chainsaw like in Hostel, but it's like a Charlie Chaplin guy, and he goes, oh no, my legs do now.
I think that would make more sense actually than what they're actually trying to tell us is happening. This is clearly an instance of the American horror. Someone told the American Horror Story writers about snuff films. And they were like, that is so sick. We're going to put it in our show and no one's going to know what it is. And then they're going to look it up and be like, holy shit, that's so scary. Except for that, again, it was not a term in 1932, nor was it a term in 1952. And also, for the most part, we've determined that they're also like not real. So that's not really a thing. It's not even like an urban legend, really. It's just like, it's a thing that some people say is real, and people use nowadays, since like probably like I think the 80s or 70s, since there was a film called Snuff, like a marketing ploy for certain like edgy movies where they're like, oh, I heard a rumor that this was a real snuff film. Mm-hmm. Like it's more just a term that's like thrown around to try and make
baiting
things seem
the
scarier.
Worst people.
Yeah.
Yeah, baiting the worst horror fans. Yeah.
And... Speaking of that, you know how we always talk about how they rip off like the worst movies ever, and also the best movies ever? Well, they've decided that in this particular scene where they are doing this like flashback for Elsa, that they are pretty much one-to-one ripping off what is known as the worst horror movie fan you've ever met's favorite movie, a Serbian film. Don't watch it or Google it, but every one of the worst people you've ever met will tell you that if you don't watch it, you're not a real horror fan. Don't listen to them. Anyway, it's insane, and I mean insane with a capital I, that American Horror Story was like, we're gonna rip that off. Truly a choice, TM, by this company to make this decision and make it part of this woman's backstory. Edward Mordrake has a very similar reaction of like, that's fucked up and crazy. That's wild. But like, you're here, though. You didn't die. So what's the how did that happen?
And she just explains that the little soldier boy who fell in love with her came and saved her, but like, so he was just like nearby and ran it, whatever. Okay, sure. They do no attempt at even explaining this. And then she just starts yelling that her career was ended by this, and she's like, I had the most beautiful legs, and we're like, nothing you have done has had any relevance to your legs, lady. Like, don't get me wrong. I understand there was more of an appreciation back in the day for a fine fox with some hot gams, but yes. Like, you didn't display any propensity for gams.
The butthole tennis guy was not there for the gams. He was not there for the legs. I hate to break it to you.
He was there for the butthole tetanus. Exactly. He needed someone to say bark like a dog and get butthole tetanus. That's what he needed. But yeah, she starts like basically being like, oh, my career was over, I couldn't do it anymore. And I was like, did you want to be in showbiz or like fetish porn? Because also, if you wanted to be in fetish porn, I don't know if having prosthetic legs is actually like a downside in that specific career field. Like, I feel like there is work there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything, some people would probably pay more. In fact, in the previous scene when she's telling us part one of her story, she's like, and there were amputees everywhere in the brothel. Like, all right. So like, you just said that like, clearly people are into that also. Like, maybe you just kind of shift your demographic a bit and you can keep doing what you're doing. Though, I mean, like, if we're being honest, I don't think if that was me that got my legs cut off with a chainsaw, I think that more so the trauma of getting my legs cut off with a chainsaw would be what made me stop making the fetish porn, not the losing my legs.
Yeah. Not a bad call. You know what? Yeah.
Liz, that's reasonable. I gotta say, if my employers cut my fucking legs off with a chainsaw, I probably would be like, I don't think I should work for you anymore.
Not for me.
I hate working at Subway. Isn't worth it.
You know what? The benefits aren't that fucking good.
So that's the end of the story. And the demon face on the back of Edward Mordrake's head is like, oh, that's fucked up. It's her for sure. It's for sure she's her. I'd like to remember everybody where we are. We are in Elsa's tent, which is like dead center of the circus / freak show. Nowhere fucking near what is about to happen. Like, not even close to being near to it. Not even like in proximity to it. Then we hear like the little tinkle tinkle of a music box ? Which distracts the demon. And we find out that is a music box that is being played at Twisty's camp in the woods.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. They realized at this point that like, okay, well, we do want Twisty to be the one who gets taken, but how does Edward Mordrake get over there? Twisty doesn't actually live at the circus. Did no one tell the writers this?
It's not a part of the circus. It's just a guy who lives kind of nearby. Like, it's not part of the circus.
That's right. I
think this is why we have the absolutely wild decision from Dandy and Twisty to bring all of their like captives out of the captive cage and put a little show on for them, because it's the only way they could explain Edward Mordrake showing up, which is wild to me, because that then implies that any revelry or performance on Halloween, freak show, circus or not, and there's a chance Edward Mordrake. Honestly, that to me means I've probably gotten blackout drunk with Edward Mordrake at some point.
Right?
Based on the Halloween parties I've been at. Yeah, like, that dude has definitely just been like, you're not the one, but you can put away vodka like nobody's business. Yeah, man.
Me playing peekaboo with my infant nieces and nephews, and Edward Mordrake shows up like, you gotta go. You're coming to hell with me.
You're the one.
What?
Oh my god. And also, they're about to put on a performance a music box is not involved with. So I'm still not sure where the fuck this music box came from. Also, it must be fucking blaring for like demon Edward Mordrake to hear it all the way at the fucking freak show.
Yeah, I assume this was like the magic performance sense he gets on Halloween. But like, I would then say, what is he going to take the music box? That's the thing performing here.
And this opens a real Pandora's box about Edward Mordrake rules of like, okay, well, so does he like get this spidey sense that anybody's performing like everywhere? So like, hypothetically, if we all did a little circus performance on Halloween, it really lowers the chances that you're going to get, like, owned by Edward Mordrake. Because he's got to pick one person out of now, like, millions instead of, like, five. So now it seems like maybe we should just all perform on Halloween.
This would, Liz, it would also...
Congratulations, you're solving the origin of many religious practices. you got it.
It's also, like, I mean, it's also, like, kind of weird because it's, like, then this wouldn't be just a carny story that like only certain people know about. Like everyone would know about friggin' Edward Mordrake. The guy won't stop showing up, you know? Like he's everywhere. Like
everyone hates this guy.
Everyone hates Edward Mordrake, and I'm not shocked. He's so annoying every time. Like, all right, somebody's going to hell. Like, god damn it. Like, we're just it's a kid's talent show, Edward. Jeez.
Also, like, what if I had shit to do and he just showed up and he's like, tell me your life story right now? And I'm like, man, I gotta go to work. And he's like, okay, boys, hold him down. He won't tell me a story. Like, come on, man.
All right, get in the car. You're coming.
Burger King.
You're coming with me to work my shift at Burger King. Oh my god. Well, it doesn't matter. Twisty, and not even really Twisty. Can we also say this is kind of fucked up? It's not really Twisty doing the show. It's Dandy doing the show. Twisty's just like there.
Mm-hmm.
So Twisty is the little guy at a piano watching the snuff film, just kind of plinking away at the keys.
Yeah, like, this is not Twisty's show. This is Dandy's show, which means that Edward Mordrake, if anything, should be talking to Dandy. And I really bemoan that the one person he doesn't talk to is Dandy, because I would love to see the interaction between Edward Mordrake and Dandy. But alas, that is not what happens. But Dandy's putting on a little show, and they, being American Horror Stories writers, immediately and promptly conflate magicians and clowns because they are trying to saw Maggie in half as a magic trick, which is not something clowns do. That is magicians. That is not what clowns do. And during this, and he's like going to do it for realsies. So like also not a magic trick. Which I would think would make Twisty more mad, because like Twisty's deal is he's trying to do like real clown shit, TM. And sawing a lady in half is more like Terrifier / Pennywise clown shit, TM.
Yeah.
Jimmy gets free somehow of his bindings and knocks Dandy out for like the fifth time. Twisty kind of seems a little hyped that Dandy's knocked out. I think he maybe is getting tired of his shenanigans. And then everybody scatters. Just everybody scatters. Dandy gets up like, oh no, I wasn't done with my show. And Twisty grabs Jimmy and puts him in a headlock. And then they get Jimmy specifically back to the murder bus to murder him. And then right before they murder Jimmy, Edward Mordrick shows up like, hey. Clown that can't talk. I have got to know what you've got going on. All right. It's time to ruin Twisty the Clown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, all right. Dandy is running around freaking out about everyone leaving. Maggie tells him to sprint off and, you know, just them running away, generally speaking. Dandy falls down and does the screaming, I hate you over and over bit, that- which went from being like pretty good and kind of hitting when it was like him trying to maintain face and then breaking behind the scenes as like a he's quite fucked up behind. Now it's just like, oh, he just has like a catchphrase when he gets beat up, like Team Rocket.
Yeah, I 100%.
Dandy's blasting off again!
As someone who complimented this in a previous episode, I'm 100% with you. This is garbage now. It's just so annoying. Because like he won't stop doing it. And it's just,
It really did go from like... It's the whole thing of seeing a very composed person all of a sudden have a childlike tantrum is like a little unsettling because it's just, it's wrong, right? Like that's not how they're supposed to act. But when he does it over and over and over again, it's like, oh, you're just a petulant little child. Like you're just a little man, baby. Great.
Yes, exactly.
Six. and then we cut back to camp and Edward is just getting on Twisty's case about not taking his mask off with which like Edward, you're like the ghost leader of freaks. Be a little empathetic. He's clearly got the mask on for a reason, my brother. Like,
right?
It would have been better to be like, hey, it's okay, man. I'm like the patron saint of people with issues. It's cool. You can just take it off. But instead he's like, I will not be so kind a second time, clown, if you don't remove your mask. And then Twisty takes it off and is clearly like very upset by this because he does not have a jaw. I imagine this is not a comfortable thing for Twisty to experience. And then yells at him to start talking. He's like, tell me your story. And Twisty like has a panicked and like slightly pained reaction that clearly reads as, I can't, man. I don't have a mouth. Which Edward just goes, it's fine. Just focus your mind and then I'll be able to hear the voiceover you do later. And that's what they do. And it so clearly switches to an ADR mic that it's very funny to me. Like, it's this whole thing of when you can hear somebody change microphones in studios in the middle of a scene, it's so funny to me. It's me. Every single time. And then, well,
yeah.
Let's ruin Twisty, yeah?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. Who's ready to be sad about Twisty the Clown? Me, I say sadly and defeatedly. So, I guess the implication here is that Edward Mordrake can just fucking read minds, which feels a little counterintuitive to the whole deal of what's going on. Because he just gets to, like, see into Twisty's mind palace where he gives a very in-depth flashback for us, including a title card, which I think is very nice of Twisty to include in his memories. it's 1954. The captions here credit him as Twisted Clown, which I don't know if that was just, like, the workshop name for him or what. But his name
is
Twisty.
It's like a Smash Brothers boss.
Yeah. And he's like, I was a special children's clown. Whatever the fuck that means. Like, listen, later he's going to get accused of some stuff, but like calling yourself the special children's clown does kind of not do him any favors here.
Yeah. Right?
And that's, they like really try to play it up as like, this weird innocence thing, but it just like is very strange the way they present it.
Yeah. I feel like nothing in this backstory works, to be honest. I can talk more about it as it goes, but like, first of all, he doesn't come across as like, you know, all poor Twisty as they want to have happen, you know, but.
They decide he's a, as they put it, simpleton, and they, the way they have him voiced is that he's got a voice kind of like this, and it, I was the special children's clown. Like, it's like very sad and pathetic, and it sucks. It just doesn't even make sense. Like, all the times we've seen Twisty, he's just been like hooting and hollering and just like, all the time. So it's just very strange to have him just be like, oh, I was the happy, slow little clown for the babies.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about, dude?
Can you imagine if he had done that, though? If he had done that, like, mid-murdering people, just took off his mask, and that's what he sounded like?
Oh, what
oh,
was
sorry,
mean.
I gotta go. Your parents were too mean. And then after he refers to himself as the special children's clown who loves performing just for the children or whatever.
Yeah.
They have two characters show up, which, yeah, they were in fact credited directly as Evil Dwarf Number 1 and Evil Dwarf Number 2. The way they introduce them, it's even worse than you have in your notes. It's because they want to be pedophiles is what the implication is. Is they're upset because they go, I love it when the kids hop on your lap and wiggle around. Like, they're just like the worst. Mm-hmm. They just introduce them like that and they're like, well, how'd he get that job? Why can't we have that job? And it's like, because you're the evil dwarfs. You're not the clown. Like, this is there's not like mobility in this business, bro. there's not a glass ceiling. There's just a position. Like,
and that's bad enough. God. Edward Wardrake's gonna add to this weird, weird, hateful rhetoric around little people. But like that aside, to like go back to shitting on American Horror Story for just being a bad TV show, not just what they are choosing to say and do in it. This is another implication slash inclusion of a flashback where the character having the flashback hears a conversation they would not have heard when it happened.
The camera is in another room from the person having the flashback, which doesn't work for a flashback.
Like, you can show a flashback that shows multiple perspectives, but it does not work when that flashback is being presented as someone is telling a story. Like, that doesn't make any sense. They always do this. Like, you can just show a flashback to, like, a previous time so that we, the audience, can know what's going on. But when you continually do it in a format where it is a person telling their experience, it does not make any sense to include conversations that the person who's telling the story would not have been privy to. Because otherwise, they're either just making it up or they're just assuming what happened, which I mean, kind of reflects poorly on Twisty, if we're being honest.
Yep.
But now it's time for their second favorite thing to be weird and hateful about, and that's smoking weed. Evil Dwarf 1 and 2 are smoking weed.
I didn't even parse that this was supposed to be weed. I thought they were just handing him a cigarette because he was such an innocent little guy that they're like, here, smoke a cigarette. And he was like, ooh,
that was spicy.
Which, hey, you know what? That happens to all sorts of people, especially if you smoked weed before you smoked a cigarette. You'll inhale wrong. It's really bad.
Yeah. That's not on Twisty. I don't blame him for that.
Look,
this
happens to everyone.
This is how he lost his jaw. That's what we're getting at. No.
So, Twisty comes out at the campfire late at night and sits down. They hand him, you know, some flaming object, and he takes a hit and is like, ooh, burns my float. And then they just start immediately being like really directly mean and bullying him. Which one of them goes, were you dropped on your head as a baby? And then Twisty just turns and goes, how'd you know? It wasn't my mom's fault. It's fine. Which, for what it's worth, they do have Twisty be like legitimately very funny in these next few scenes. And it doesn't work that people start laughing. He's like, this isn't funny. When I'm like, okay, but the actor did a great job on this delivery. And it was actually quite funny. Because, yeah, like, I can't even remember what other point it was. There was, like, something else he said where he's just like, yeah, it wasn't her fault. Or, like, oh, yeah, she liked to drink, too, or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, it wasn't her fault because she had too many cocktails, yeah.
That's what it was, yeah. And they all cracked up, which is, like, pretty funny. Like, if I told you, like, oh, yeah, dropped on my head as a bunch as a kid, it wasn't my dad's fault, though. He just, you know, he liked Ice House Natural. Like, something like that. Like, that's a pretty good bit.
Yeah.
So when they start laughing about this, it does kind of come off as, well, I mean, it was like a little funny.
To be fair. And he is a clown.
It was a pretty good bit. But then they just, after that, they're just like, well, this is going nowhere. We can't just be mean to him. We decided to accuse you of being a pedophile and have called the police, which, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, yeah, and it's just really weird. It's specious, you know, because it's just sort of like, hey, the cops are coming and they're coming after you for being a pedophile. Like, what? I am not one, though. That's terrible. Well, you better run. Okay. Which is like, I don't know. Is Twisty like that? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he is.
I hate to keep bringing this up, but this is another illustration of them being like, when you ingest a weed, you can't make a good decision. That's why he's so scared and runs off into the woods because he believes them.
But they already had him be like, you know, having mental processing issues with his faculties and whatnot. Did mm-hmm. they really need to throw a weed on top of it?
Yes.
I guess.
Is evil and terrible. An American Horror Story will not stop until everyone knows it.
This is honestly probably the thing that gets him into hell, like more than anything else he's going to say.
Edward Wardrick's like, whoa, slow down. What was that about smoking weed?
Twisty, I can't believe this.
You're going to hell. Get in the van.
So yeah, this gives Twisty the anxiety and he runs off, which, sure, I guess. Edward Mordrick then passes him a handkerchief and is like, I guess it was supposed to be for crying. For me, I definitely was thinking more like, hey man, you're like making a lot of drool. You can put that mask back on if you want. Like, at that point. But then, yeah, he just says a very strange thing that is a truism that people say about smaller than average men, not folks with, you know, like dwarfism or whatever, you know, like not for the genetic condition. It's for like guys who are on the smaller side who feel the need to constantly try to like swing up to prove how tough they are, like Napoleon complex. But instead, Edward's like, yeah, I've never cared for dwarves. They're all power mad, which like, what?
You interpreted it as Napoleon complex. I interpreted it as the writers of American Horror Story not knowing that, like, fictional dwarves from, like, Lord of the Rings are not the same as, like, real people with dwarfism.
My axe. Like, yeah,
I don't particularly care for this Gimli fellow.
That's how I interpreted it, is that, like, they associated, like, fictional dwarves from, like, D&D and also, like, Lord of the Rings as, like, being real people.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I could see it. I have to be totally frank with you.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So Twisty then continues to explain that he, after getting kicked out, he went home to Jupiter, but his mom had already passed away at this point. So he started living in a bus and he couldn't be a clown anymore because word travels fast in the Carney circuit, which like, what word? Nothing happened. Like, it's like one of those things. It's just like, you didn't do anything. Nothing happened. Oh, well, I guess people really trust Evil Dwarf number one and Evil Dwarf number two, according to the Amazon credits. I guess people are just really into that, like trusting those guys. So he has, in his idea, a great idea, which is to take all the trash and spin it into gold, like Rumpelstiltskin. So he starts making kids' toys, but, like, they're, like, really bad toys. Which, don't get me wrong, all kids' toys were, like, weirdly bad for hundreds of years. They didn't have Mario or shit. They had a ball totally. And a cup. It's crazy.
Not much better, you know? Like, yeah. Like, yeah. Yeah.
And so he goes into the a toy store carrying all of his like manufactured little baubles and tries to sell them to the toy store guy, who's like, no, sir, I buy things from Hasbro and resell them. I'm a classic brick and mortar operation. And he goes, no, the kids will love these. Here, check this one out. And like, hand picks the one that is the least a toy of all of them.
Right.
Like, just takes like a wheel with a fan blade on it. He's like, the kids are going to love this. He's it's like, it's a crank and a wheel, sir.
It's like an egg beater. Yeah, it doesn't really work. Yeah. But
and then he's like, I know what the kids want. Trust me, I do. And runs over to like a kid and a parent, which, again, Twisty's still in his clown regalia and has been forever. So it's like really dirty and messed up and stuff. So like,
right,
this is a case of that toy shop owner would have just been calling the cops the second this dude walked close to the door. Like, yeah, just straight up, especially at this period in time. No shot. No shot. There's empathy for this human being. Like, yeah. It's not even a little. But after he, you know, harangues this child with his bad toy, the, you know, kid starts kind of like shying away. And the guy's like, hey, stop harassing my customers. I bet you're one of those. I bet you're a weird little pedophile guy, which is just, again, a wild leap to make. Truly Elon Musk being mad about submarine guys level of bullshit. Just like, you're a pedophile probably, which... Twisty then has a very strong reaction and says, that's a bad lie, that's an ugly lie, which, okay, yeah, sure, man,
yeah, there you go.
Sure, whatever. And he goes back to the bus and just has a shotgun. So in case you were wondering, did like Twisty lose his jaw in any like interesting way or anything?
Nah.
No. It also does not make sense with how they show it that he lost his jaw, because they have him go back and shove a shotgun in his mouth and point it towards his brain and pull the trigger. How does this remove somebody's jaw? That's a great question, Mega Man.
It was a clown shotgun that shot out a little thing that said bang, and it was only enough of an impact to take off his mouth.
It was clown shot. It's not quite buckshot. Makes you laugh. Okay.
Like little ribbons came out of it, but it was like too many, and it was too much for his mouth, and he just couldn't handle it.
Yeah, it's that whole thing of like, less lethal doesn't mean not lethal. It just means harder to make lethal. Yeah, exactly. So then he bandages his face and draws the big smile on his bandages and is like, great, okay, that means now I can terraform this into a manufactured mask from Halloween City somehow. Now I have this. And goes back to the circus and is like hanging out in front of the freak show, which this doesn't make sense, because the whole time, by the way, he's hooting and hollering about how he hates the freaks for being mean, the mean freaks, he hates them. So what's he do? He goes to the freak show and stands out front and like tries to take clients from them as Jimmy is carnival barking and is just like, just ignore that guy. He likes to stand around. He's a little bit of a fucking weirdo, but whatever. He doesn't harm nobody. Yeah. And then he apparently starts kidnapping kids and killing parents, which he's been doing for way longer than it seemed in this story.
You know what? Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, this is what it really annoys me about the whole thing, too, is, like, it doesn't match with what... Okay, first of all, I don't think you ever even needed, like, a backstory for Twisty in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, he was fine. Like, you didn't have to do anything with him.
No, so, much like Darth Vader, he was probably better as just a dark, imposing force.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, 100%. And so, but we're forced into this for some reason. And then... the backstory they give him sucks, you know? So you've completely ruined his mystique. You completely ruined everything. Yeah.
As pathetic as possible. Yeah.
And, like, the thing is that what I did like about Twisty is you didn't know what his deal was. He was, like, trying to be a clown, but he was, like, also killing people, and he's, like, showing that kid the robot and then a head. So the thing is that, like, now you've given him a backstory. He is trying to be a clown, but he's just really slow-witted and brain-damaged and is killing people. But then he just kills people, and you're like, but that doesn't tie in, because he's like, I remembered that toy maker, and I went back to kill him for being a pedophile, which is like, but that's like too like premeditated for like what you're trying to show me. Like, is this guy like too?
Also, he was a clown earlier that was quite successful with children and like made balloon animals and stuff. So why is he like, do you like corpses now? Is this anything?
Yeah.
Is this good? Do you like this? I like this. Do you like this? Why do I like it? I don't know, but I do now because I like weird stuff. Like, I guess what they're trying to imply is that he's like had a full Joker breakdown when he failed to kill himself, and like now he doesn't understand reality in any meaningful way. But that doesn't super translate well to like murdering people and also like playing with corpses.
Also, like, he does have a driving motivating factor, which is his hatred of freaks, which is why it's so upsetting that this, in the moment where they're dropping his story and insisting it, they immediately forget before the scene is over, which is agonizing. Because, yeah, after telling this story of being, you know, forced out and forced to run away and become a murderer or something, Edward Mordrake's like, hey, congratulations, you made my weird demon face cry. So actually that last time he said she's the one, he was wrong. You're the one. And then the demon face is like, yeah, sorry, you might be fucked up. This is the one. Forget that other lady.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that for the record, but he should, because he definitely did declare this is the one we're picking as a demon who is a malevolent force of a higher nature. I'm certain about this. 10 minutes later, I'm more certain about this.
That was before this guy showed up. Yeah, so that was Twisty's backstory. He's like, okay, have all the other sad ghost circus people touch you and we're gonna take you to hell, and they do, and I guess that kills him, question mark.
No, it kills him because before they take him to hell, and this for me was like really bad, was they have this guy who like takes you into hell as a malevolent force, which we've had before, and usually they just like take you by the hand and literally walk you through some form of gate or something, you know, like you go with them. It's not. Well, unfortunately, Edward Mordrake pulls out a knife and stabs Twisty like 4 or 5 times. Like, it's really funny, too, because he like turns around and is like, OK, I'm going to let my demon face talk to you for a second. The demon face is like, yep, that's the guy. And then he turns around really quickly and stabs him 4 times. And it's like, well, that's not magic at all. You're just a guy who stabs people.
Yeah.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's one way of taking someone to hell, I guess. But yeah, then the sad ghosts show up and like take him away, which I would think that Twisty, given what we just learned about him, would fucking hate it, given that he says that he hates the freak show and people in it. Now he's like stuck with them for forever, but it's presented like aw, now he finally has friends, which is crazy, insane for them to show us one thing 1 minute and then the next minute be like, but he changed his mind.
Also, a lot, this, and this is a common problem in media, but in American Horror Story in particular, is how many wounds do you carry into the afterlife? They can never decide, because in this scene, when Twisty stands up, he's full jaw mode. He's back together again. He's whole. Yeah. They gave him everything. He's fully healed. Literally in the same shot, there is a lady who still has her throat slashed. I'd be so pissed off if I was her. I'd be like, hey, Mordrake, why does this guy get his jaw back, but my neck still wiggles back and forth weird? Fuck off.
Quiet you.
Come fix this.
Your story wasn't sad enough. Womp, womp.
Excuse her, demon face. She doesn't understand it.
And Jimmy doesn't like directly witness all this, but he is in the murder bus, so like he like hears it, I guess. The thing is, like, did he hear Twisty's story, or did he just hear like well, Edward Mordrake like mind read Twisty?
Yeah, I'm imagining it was like a lot of that, and then Edward Mordrake occasionally being like just
like
that's so sad. Holy shit!
Like, honestly, preaching guy, like, yeah, that is sad when you shot your own face off, like from the audience.
Anyway, Jimmy's crying.
So Dandy rolls back through and flips over Twisty's body, finds him dead. And doesn't really have a moment of, damn, the one guy I kind of liked. Just immediately is like, give me that mask. Which that thing has to be vile. If Stinky. It's just been holding up the bottom half of someone's mouth for multiple years without being cleaned. Nightmare. Well, anyway, he takes it off and immediately puts it on his face and is like, yay, I love this. This is good for me.
Yum. Yum. Also, I'm not going to ask how the fuck this giant murder clown died. I'm not going to like check to see if the thing that did this to the giant murder clown I've been hanging out with is still around. I'm certainly not in any danger. Anyway, bye. I have a cool new mask now. And then the cops show up. I assume Maggie got away and got to the cops. They have a really quick response time. And then the next day, everybody's being interrogated by the police, like around the murder clown area. And she's like, yeah, there were two men dressed like clowns. Two men dressed like clowns. One of them got away. I don't know where he went. The other one dead. And then Jimmy's also talking to a cop and he's like, I hate cops. Also, I'm going to talk to a cop. And he's like, okay, well, did you see who killed the clown? Was it you? I mean, he was a serial killer, so it would be okay if he did.
Right.
And Jimmy's like, no, I ain't no hero. Hey, why don't I get your name, officer? So when I talk to the reporters who the real hero is, I'll tell them. And
okay. So they're trying to make this like a weird surprise turn. But what Jimmy's about to say is just so fully unhinged that it doesn't land in any way, shape, or form. Because it's the cop is like interviewing him and trying to get him to say, yeah, I killed the clown, I'm the big hero or whatever, so they can have like a fun story to put in the paper. You know, like that kind of thing. Like clearly the cop's trying to bait him into this, which for what it's worth would be great for Jimmy's cause. Like Jimmy should 100%. Absolutely just be like, yeah, I got his ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I saved the children. You're welcome.
100%. 100%.
But instead he goes, hey, can I get your name so I make sure I spell it right when I tell him who the real hero is, which is supposed to be him, you know, being humble and passing the rewards off to the officer. And then he says, so I can tell the reporters who the real hero is. That's right. My friend Meep. Fucking killed at the station. He didn't deserve to die. You killed Meep. I'm never gonna forget it. Which truly is, even when you're watching it in context, in proper speed, so unhinged and so strange.
So bad.
Like, what the fuck are you talking about, Jimmy? What the fuck are you saying?
Even the cop is like, what the fuck is a Meep?
They won't stop selling us on, like, don't you care about Meep? Like, no, I don't. I don't give a fuck about Meep. Stop it with Meep. But they love him. I don't know why.
You should care about Meep. Everyone should care about Meep. Meep was the best of us. Meep was the real hero. Also, what did Meep do to be the real hero?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh,
Meep was always saving children from murder clowns. I'm always saying
like
this.
Goku being like, you know who was the real hero? Krillin getting blown up by Frieza, making me so mad I got stronger.
Yeah.
So this is unbelievable what happens. Jimmy and Maggie roll back to the circus on their bike and Elsa and the gang
now.
Are having their group.
It has gas now. Sorry. I just had to remind everybody it didn't have gas before.
Oh my God, you're right. When the fuck did I get gas? Oh my God. Well, it has gas now, as Liz thankfully pointed out. My brain wasn't broken enough. Thanks. And they roll in, and they're all having the freak show is just like having their communal breakfast, all that stuff together. And Jimmy and Maggie roll in. Elsa goes, hey, where the fuck have you two been? And Jimmy goes, curfew's lifted. What? Curfew's lifted. Maggie explains, Jimmy killed the serial killer, which I feel like so many people were mentioning there were two guys.
Right?
It's cool. I stopped the only serial killer, the one, you know, so they're just lifting curfew. How many times did they need to look at the camera and be like, you know, I think there were two clowns.
We saw them. In fact, the one that was trying to kill me, that's the one that got away. Anyway, we have no evidence that the other one is the one that was killing people. All we know is that the one that got away did try to kill me. However, everyone will treat this as though the real serial killer is dead. And Elsa and everybody else in the circus is like, who gives a shit? We had a fucking ghost here last night. we don't fucking care.
And Jimmy responds, like, yeah, Elsa's just like, we were visited by a ghost. And before she can finish, Jimmy's like, Edward Mordrake, I know, he's the one who killed Twisty. Oh! okay.
Yeah, we also saw the ghost. Fine, we got it. But yeah, and then the whole town shows up, question mark, or at least a fucking lot of them do, and they're like, yeah. Uh-oh. And,
yeah, they have an initial reaction of, uh-oh, torches and pitchforks finally running us out of town, which, like, does not make any sense in context. This is a wild thing to expect. And so everyone shows up and they start pouring out of their cars and they walk up and they're like, well, what do you want? What's your deal? And then the most normal everyman character they could muster walks up and goes, I just wanted to thank you for saving those kids. I love this guy. They found the most standard dad they could. This guy's awesome.
Also, we made you a pie. That's how you know that we're serious, because we made you a pie. One pie for the whole place.
A little girl offers a tray of brownies to Jimmy and goes, I'm sorry, I already eaten one. And Jimmy goes, thanks or whatever, kid.
Yeah.
Like, all right. They do a big whole thing, too, of the dad being like, I want to shake the hand of whoever did this. And then, you know, goes to shake Jimmy's hand, and he's just not weird about it at all. He's just a normal guy. Yeah. And this is like a big breakthrough moment of him just being like, yeah, you have two fingers instead of four. Whatever, man. I've known people who were born with six. Who cares? It's fine. Polydactylism isn't that rare. And then, for some fucking reason, and I don't know why they felt the need to have this interaction, they have a little girl just, straight stare at Desiree and go, are you a real lady? Which... especially in this, like, she's not particularly outrageous looking. She's just like a lady in a dress. Mm-hmm. Really,
remember, like, her unless deal, you were like, her deal is that she has three boobs, and it's not like she has them whipped out right now, like with nipple tassels on. She's just wearing regular clothes, which means either that kid is dead locked on her titties, like looking at those titties, like three of them. Or this kid would have no reason to ask Desiree this, period. Oh, and there is half of a woman on the ground, like in front of Desiree. Like, there's a woman who does not have half of her body in front of Desiree.
This is kind of the problem with having Del the grumpy homo sapien, aka the strong man, around too, is like, no kid would ever call that out when there's so many other things that are more apparent first. And, like, kids aren't good at being polite with that shit.
No.
So, like, they would absolutely, like, Paul the Illustrated Seal would immediately be called out by a child. Just immediately, because they don't have that self-control. They don't understand. But the idea of, like, pointing at Desiree specifically and being like, huh, three boobs, you real? It's like really very weird for a kid to do.
yes it is.
Thank you, American Horror Story. Very
you,
cool
American.
Now we know that racism and also ableism are over. Thank you. Del stumbles out of his trailer and seems mad about everything that's going on for some reason. I don't know. They don't follow up on that, really.
Yeah.
I think the implication is supposed to be that, like, Jimmy becoming the hero of the people and the hero of the not Circus, is, you know, gonna help him overwhelm Del's control over everything. But, like, it still doesn't make sense that Del wants to control everything, so I don't care. Yeah. Still, his motivations are dumb, so I don't give a shit.
Yep. Exactly the same.
And then, Dot and Bette visit Elsa afterwards, because Elsa, like, gets up on, like, a thing, like a ladder or a little, like, the Barker Stadium or station
thing.
Yeah,
podium, and it's like, soapbox, whatever. Yeah.
We're going to have a big circus tonight. You should come look at the big circus. Everybody's invited. You have to still buy tickets, though. You can buy tickets over there. And then as they're setting everything up, Dot and Bette are like...
Wait, hold on. I need to point out one detail that made me laugh so hard, and it's just like this weird thing of not understanding what a performance is. When they're all talking and like celebrating the township and like shaking Jimmy's hand and stuff, yeah, Elsa pops up and is like, okay, thanks everybody, you can come to our show, but you have to buy tickets and the booth is fucking over there. And everyone starts cheering and applauding. And I'm like, no. Someone being like, hey, if you could queue up over there instead, that'd be great. Just a little more single file. And everyone else, woo, yeah, that's orderly.
Hell yeah. And then as they're setting up, Dot and Bette are like, hey, we're doing a circus thing, right? And then Elsa's like, yeah, Lamau, we don't actually need you anymore. I know that the whole reason like we included you in this was to like save our circus, but that guy just killed the serial killer, the only one. There's not a second one. We don't really need you anymore. You can like still hang out or whatever, but we don't really need you anymore.
Yeah. They even like have a moment of like, oh, but we were the opener and now you're having us open for you. And she goes, no, you're opening for the pinheads. Fuck you. Fuck you, kids. Actually, all that whole like first two episodes of this show where we spent like, you know, risk life and limb getting you, don't care anymore. I'm over it. I'm done with it.
Yeah. And that is like the natural progression of this storyline. But then Stanley shows up. He's, I guess, done banging the guy who's dressed as Thor. It's taken him quite a while because he's just here now. And he's like, hey, I'm the guy that Maggie predicted would show up. Remember me? And that's where we leave that plot thread. But I bet you're wondering, but weren't there two guys dressed as clowns? There were. The other one was Dandy. And he's home now. And he shows up dressed as a clown and startles Dora, who is still not having any of his shit, and is like, man, take that shit off. You look nasty. That mask smells like ass. You're a shitty pants boy, and you smell like shit. I clean your underwear, and it constantly has shit in it. You are the shitty pants boy supreme. And then he stabs her and starts laughing like the Joker. Happy part two, everybody.
Yay.
Twisty's gone, in case you're wondering. In case you're wondering if he'll come back, no, Twisty is gone.
No, he's no. gone. Yeah. Until season
no,
seven,
that
right?
is, there is literally only one way for someone to be removed from the story fully in American Horror Story, and it is to be exiled by a spirit. That is like the one way that they're like, yeah, if a very powerful ghost shows up to your house and takes you to the afterlife, you can't come back. Anything else? Yeah, maybe. But as soon as like, a Baba Yaga grabs you and is like, we're going. That's it. That's the end.
Yeah. And that's
so
our
what
part
is,
four.
What's the name of the next episode? Oh, it's stupid. It's Pink Cupcakes. Great. Mm. I'm sure that'll...
Pink Cupcakes. What an interesting name. Odd, that's the one episode title I remember from this show. I'm just going to say that. Mm-hmm. Liz, do you remember Pink Cupcakes of all the episode titles in the entire series for some reason?
It's so weird that you mentioned that, Slow Beef. It's like I'm trying to conjure up a memory of that specific episode, but it's almost like there's something so traumatic and also infuriating that I seem to have repressed everything about that, and I can't seem to remember anything associated with that title. That's so crazy.
That's so weird. What? Don't worry, I bet it didn't happen. Anyway, so all right, folks, we'll see you next time.
What? Wait, no, what? Wait, how are they gonna... Pink Cupcakes, they fuck up that bad?
Oh,
what? I was like...
Man.
What? But, okay, well, now I have to wait like a week to figure out why everybody's so goddamn mad about pink cupcakes, and I guess you will too. Thanks for listening.
You'll find out quick.
Okay.
Till next time, everybody. Later. Have a great one.
Bye.